When you need to replace your shampoo because somebody put barbecue sauce in it, the easiest and most convenient place to go is Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob as a podcast whenever you start your shopping with our link, robiswebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robiswebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a guy who's going right from this podcast to a special screening of Allegiant, from the Divergent series. Rob Sestrini, hello everybody. Not really. How's everybody doing? We're here with our week three recap of Big Brother Canada. Very excited to talk about an exciting week and an exciting season of Big Brother Canada, and it's going to be a very fun show here today to talk about everything on the week gone by and look ahead to week four. First, let me introduce, joining me for the first time on one of these recaps this season is one of the top people out there covering the Big Brother live feeds, the great Brent Wolgamott. Brent, how are you?
I wasn't sure which you were talking about there for a second. I'm like, has Mike been on the show this season?
He has not.
Okay.
Well, and then also joining us is, and again, a great fan of Big Brother and International Big Brother. Give it up for Mr. Mike Bloom.
Rob, did you see if there was anything special in that bell? Maybe a little bit of sriracha in it? I gotcha!
You gotcha.
Joke's on you, you dumb bitch! I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. I'm joking, Rob. That's how I joke with people.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. The old dumb bitch joke, you know, gets people every time. I have to say, that is one of my least favorite things of the person who says like whatever, and then it's like, I'm kidding, that's a joke, I'm joking. That always gets under my skin, so I can definitely understand where Levita is coming from with that, but unfortunately it's the best of times, it's the worst of times for Levita, as always in the Big Brother house, and we'll talk about her second consecutive week of being HOH that did not go according to plan, which was sandwiched around a week where she was the target, but then stayed in the house. So a lot to unpack here. Of course, also, if you're listening to the audio podcast of this, I spoke with Christine earlier this morning, had a nice little chat with her. You'll hear that after the audio version of this podcast on robiswebsite.com. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Great season of Big Brother so far.
Brett, yep. I know that you were on already earlier this week, that you and Taryn and Alex were blabbing with Jordan Parhar after the eviction last night, which you could hear on Reality TV Rehap Ups. Very fun to listen to. And this is my first time getting to talk about Big Brother Canada for the week, so I'm very excited to get into this. And Mike, this is the first time that I'm getting to hear your take at all on Big Brother Canada. What have you thought about this season?
So I've been really enjoying it so far, but I want to put a little bit of a caveat on that, because I do feel like oftentimes even the worst seasons of Big Brother have really interesting beginning of the games, really interesting first few weeks, just because it is a little bit of a free-for-all where everyone's just sort of scrambling and trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, even Big Brother 16, which I think has been considered by many to be one of the worst seasons that has existed in the U.S. franchise.
How dare
you. A really great first few weeks with, you know, Devin basically being the big source of entertainment and, you know, sleuthing out Donnie and Caleb being Caleb and Frankie being Frankie. Take that, you know, however you'd like. But I think the first few weeks always provide a lot of entertainment, and it definitely has proven so here. I mean, Jordan said when you guys got together last night, this is the third week in a row that the HOH's intended target at the beginning of the week did not go home. And that has to be some sort of record. And I think it speaks to how, I mean, this season is kind of ridiculous. I know we're only about a month in, but this season already seems so ridiculous to me in terms of not only the house dynamics, but just the level of things that are going on at any point in time in this house. I feel like it's something that we haven't seen so far on Big Brother Canada specifically.
So we'll talk through everything that went on this week. Plus, we'll get into in our spoiler section talking about the HOH and maybe a little bit of prognosticating what might be coming up the next time Big Brother Canada is going to be dropping another wild card on us this Thursday night in a special 90-minute episode. So lots to do. We want to hear from you. Hashtag RHAP on Twitter, or you could leave us comments on our YouTube channel at Rob Has a Website. Facebook.com/YouTube. All right. So Christine is gone. Brent, I know you were happy that Christine is gone because you felt like that she was not providing a lot of drama to the show. Did you feel like that Christine was also a bad player in addition to somebody who was not creating a lot of drama?
Certainly, I think she was a bad player. You need to look no further than the nomination ceremony to see that she did not know how to play nice with anybody. She was nominated, you know, you've talked about on this show many, many times what to do when you're nominated. You know, you go right to the person who nominated you. You know, it's okay. I understand. I really, you know, there's no bad blood. Instead, she said, I don't want to hug. And then, of course, she did it again when she was, you know, voted off, which I love seeing that, you know, because I hate fakeness at the end after they've already said, you know, we want your ass out of the house. But she wasn't a very good player, and she didn't provide any good TV. And Rob, we like good TV.
We always do like the good TV, especially in the Big Brother Canada.
Good TV.
Yes, that's what
supposedly,
we like.
Supposedly.
Mike, you talked about at the top of the show about how, well, you know, this is good, but even, you know, the best, even the worst of Big Brother is always exciting in the beginning. You know, it's sort of like its own March Madness tournament where, you know, the first 2 days are always really, really crazy. And then let's see how it shakes out from there. But I would say that I feel like that this is an especially strong start. And I think that this is one that is very sustainable in terms of, I really love what's going on here this season with this idea of the mighty middle, where the best players in the game potentially are deciding, maybe led by Mitch and potentially Joel, in the middle of the house, the people who are saying, okay, and I feel like this is a like a little finger strategy. And I was talking about this sort of idea on the Survivor podcast this week, where I felt like that the Braun tribe is in this position of being able to decide which way they want to go in this battle between the brains and the beauty, that I love this strategy. And I would say rather than go all in with one, pick a side, take a person out from one side, then take a person out from the other side, and keep the losses coming on both sides. And based on the people that we've lost from the house so far, with all due respect to the great Paige and Shari and Christine, that I feel like that we have not lost anybody. The damage has been very minimal in terms of keeping the excitement in the house, Mike. I feel like that we are set up for a really great season.
I'd agree. And I'd say, I think the dynamics in the house right now are akin to a double stuffed Oreo, and that, yes, there are cookies on either end. We've got our Paige and our, I got our Maddie and our Dallas. We've got our third wheel, but really that cream in the middle is really what we're after. And I agree. The interesting thing though, is that what's really even more interesting to me about this mighty middle that you speak of is that, yes, maybe Mitch or Joel might be a more vocal person in terms of determining where this middle might go, but for the most part, they're kind of free agents as well. This group really doesn't have their own sort of allegiance to each other. It's more so, I would say this season, even more so than others, these house guests have been really self-interested, which I think as viewers, we really like to see. We don't like seeing, you know, in typical Big Brother seasons, everyone just kind of saying, okay, I'll do what the HOH wants because I don't want to make any waves. You know, or these big alliances forming. And I think you guys spoke about it a little bit last night, but we haven't seen a big alliance form, which has been great because it makes for much more fluid and much more dynamic gameplay overall. As exciting as something like Big Brother 6 might be, where you have a clear line in the sand with a chainsaw or a hacksaw or whatever instrument you'd like to use with that, I feel like it's more fun on a week-by-week basis when you really go in not knowing exactly what might happen once you know who the HOH is.
Now, Brent, would you say that this is a positive thing that the people in the middle don't actually have some sort of organized alliance? Because doesn't that make it harder to take them out and find their leader?
No, I would disagree, only because, and I talked about this a little bit last night, I feel like they don't need an alliance because they have good social bonds together. I feel like they understand each other on a personal level, on a human level. They really like each other. I feel like that social currency is especially valued this season. I've heard Joel talk about the fact that even though he knows that Jared is really a dangerous player at this point, that he trusts Jared more than other people in the house. So he's more inclined to keep him for now because he believes his word is good and he can get along with him. You know, it's a long time in the Big Brother house and everybody has to get along. What I was going to say really quickly about what Mike was saying about, you know, the size of the house and this mighty middle is that it's especially amazing to me because the two sides of the house, they will not even talk to each other. I mean, it's primarily because of Kelsey and Maddie, who just absolutely hate each other. You know, yeah, Ramsey does talk with Jared and some other people, so I'll give him that. He's branched out a little bit. But basically, so the trio on the left and the trio on the right hate each other. Each of them have a sidecar in that Jared, Kelsey, and Raul have Cassandra, and Maddie, Dallas, and Ramsey have LaVita, and you end up with the brothers, Mitch, Joel, and Tim in the middle, and then Nikki off doing her own thing. So it's intriguing to me that there are three very succinct groups, and even though that the middle is not a cogent alliance, that they understand where their position is in the house. And I think that's very telling, that they understand what's going on in the house, and they understand where other people think they are in the house.
And so you have these two sides which really hate each other. But it's interesting that I feel like for Big Brother to have these two warring factions, but they're small. They're small warring factions, as opposed to, you know, usually the house is divided in two, where you have like, okay, there's like, we're the, you know, we're the first six, or, you know, what, you know, we got into the house first. We're the, you know, we're the first nighters. And then it's like, okay, everybody else that's not in this is in our lines. But to have this one group who's at war with this other group, but then all these other people that are neutral in the middle, like, it really is a very exciting way to have a season set up, Brennan. I don't know if we could ever have scripted this better.
No, it's wonderful. And I, as I said last night, you know, I of the three of us live feeders, I feel like I am the one who has the least problem with the twists that Big Brother Canada throws down the path of the house guests, because I understand what Big Brother Canada is. It's a TV show first and foremost, and they're trying to keep people invested. And they, you know, Big Brother, the TV show, they don't really care about the intricate strategy of Joel and Mitchell behind the scenes. They just don't care about it for the most part. So I lament the fact that we're having such a great season. And of course, right on cue, as I said last night, here comes a wild card for a 90-minute episode next week. And I have no idea what it's going to be.
Okay.
But you have to admire production a little bit, for at least, I mean, they're taking baby steps, right? They're scaling it back a little bit. Let's remember, at this point in the season last year, we had the, you know, the instant nomination and Canada votes to evict. We had the instant eviction. We had knowledge, at least, of one player pre-jury coming back. We had the double veto twist coming into this week as well. So they're taking minute steps. Yeah. And again, we're not entirely sure what this week four twist might be. It might be cataclysmic, or it might be something small that the players don't even use at all. But I'm happy about it. I do wonder why that may be. Yeah. And I have two thoughts about that. I'm trying to figure out which one is the more prevalent one. A, it might be, oh, we got word, you know, people were really harshing on the twist from last year. Let's scale it back.
Right.
Or B, you know, this cast is known for a lot more recruits. Maybe production felt, okay, we basically handpicked this cast of people that we wanted. We know that they can deliver on these fronts. Let's let them play their own game for a little while. Because again, you know, unlike a previous season, specifically last one, which was much more applicant heavy, this one, it seems like production was adamantly going to specific people and asking, will you be in this cast? And I feel like you have much more of a guarantee of safety from a production perspective in people that you choose adamantly rather than people that are coming to you.
Brent, do you have a thought on to why there have been to this point less twists in Big Brother Canada 4?
I think it's fair to say that, you know, the first thing that Mike talked about, the fact that they really got harped on last year for that. I think that Big Brother Canada, more than Big Brother US, has their ear to the ground as far as, you know, dealing with, you know, what the public and the feeders and what the fans of the show think about the season. I feel like Big Brother US really doesn't care about what the fans think of the season. I mean, this is a television network here in the United States that thought Big Brother 16 was just the best thing since sliced bread, and when was relatively disappointed with Big Brother 17, which I thought delivered handsomely. So I think that there is some validity in the fact that they probably scaled it down a little bit. Arissa was even a slight bit defensive when Nelson, I think, did the interview with her in one of the, I forget the name of his magazine. I apologize, Nelson, but in Canada. And he asked her, you know, last season was the season of the twists. Is this season going to be even more twist heavy? And she said, oh, no. Last, you know, you have to understand last season was its own entity. That was the season of the twists. We're not going to do that as much this year. It did seem to me like she was a little defensive about it.
And the great Nelson Bronco writes for the Toronto 24 Hours.
Thank you. Thank you. I apologize, Nelson. You're great. He's a big fan of you, Rob.
Great friend of Rob as a podcast, Nelson. But to me, I feel like they sort of just walked it back to the Big Brother Canada 1 and 2 level. Both those seasons had, you know, a significant amount of twists. That Big Brother Canada 3 was just probably overboard and probably, okay, they touched the electric fence and then, okay, this is back to where it should be. And I think it's been pretty manageable so far. We'll see what comes up on the 90 Minute Thursday episode and we could speculate a bit more about that. Let's talk about some of the other power players this week and what went right and what went wrong. This is a question that is from the chat. This is from Madam DN, who wants to say, is LaVita the worst Big Brother player ever? Both of her targets didn't leave the house. Now, Brent, I actually think that LaVita is not in as bad of a situation as you might imagine for somebody with this resume that has been HOH twice and neither time has had her target go out of the house. But here she is. But she, I would not think, is the biggest fish to fry here in this real Cold War going on in the house. Do you feel like things are as bad for LaVita as people might make them out to be?
Well, her past is not necessarily a prologue because she's played horribly, let's be honest. She played horribly during week one, pretty terrible during week two when she was basically trying to fall on her sword for Sherry. And then in week three, again, her intended target does not go home, although I will contend that she played better because I loved her initial nominations. But she is in no danger of this week. Here's the thing. HOH. You don't know that, you know, she's not the HOH because she was the HOH last week, but I don't think she's in any danger this week. And I defy you to find one person in the house, maybe besides Cassandra,
right,
who would want her to be nominated this week. So I think she's in a pretty good position. Even coming out of last week, I felt like she was in a good position because, as I said last night, I liked her initial nominations. She stubbed her toe when she decided to get invested in those nominations. She should have just let them fly and let the house deal with it and you know, slunk back into the shadows, because I feel like that's where she can do her best game. I don't feel like she's a very good player when she's out in front, you know? I feel like she wants to be out in front, but she sucks out there, you know? So I feel like she needs to learn from her mistakes a little bit, and maybe she has a little bit, just a little bit.
Mike, is it possible for LaVita to be able to learn this on the fly? Do you think that she could make these adjustments and potentially be somebody who can rebound a little bit and actually make a run at this thing?
Well, I mean, it's tough because considering that what we have from her on paper so far, she was able to rectify her mistakes in her second HOH week and it didn't happen. I mean, I'm agreeing with Brent, though, because I feel like with LaVita, her game in theory is like a B. Her game in execution is like a D. I think she has great ideas. It's just she has a horrible, horrible ways of executing them. And, you know, we even saw this in Big Brother 17 with Becky. Once you're HOH, it doesn't mean, oh, the house is going to vote with me to get somebody out. You need to make sure it is on your ass this week to go to the majority of people and say it is in your best interest to vote to evict the person that I want to go home. If you don't do that, it's not a manageable HOH week. In terms of the question about, is she the worst, you know, HOH ever? I mean, it's pretty tough to see someone who didn't have a worse two HOHs combined. I will still say, however, Zach from Big Brother Canada 3 had the worst single HOH possible from a results oriented perspective. Just looking at, he won HOH and the veto and still got his closest ally evicted from the house. So I feel like that has to be in contention at least.
We're not talking about that, Mike. We don't talk about that anymore.
While the cat's away, the mice will play.
But Brent, you know, one of the themes that came out of the Survivor podcast this week was this idea that Steven had about in Survivor, the greatest strength that you could have is perceived weakness. And do you think that for LaVita, is it possible that she's been saved by her own ineptitude? And what I mean by that is, if she was a better player, wouldn't she be voted out of the house by now?
Yes, I totally agree. People don't really take her seriously, I don't think. I feel like she really works overtime on making sure that people don't take her seriously, and she's not doing it consciously. It's definitely subconsciously. It's just how she comes off with people and the way she talks with people and how she can't get along with people and she picks fights with people. Oh, it's just she is fabulous feed watching, and I think hilarious television. I mean, I'm so glad she's on this season. I'm so glad she made that terrible move in week one that just totally set the stage for a fabulous season so far. And somehow she managed to make good nominations this past week and still managed to screw it up, but I still love her.
Yeah. Now, I'm pretty sure that most of the, at least the fans that we're in contact with that are, you know, watching podcasts and are on Twitter, probably are going to be rooting for the mighty middle and all those people that are in the center of the house. But Mike, if you had to choose, which side are you more rooting for and which side are you more rooting against between the Jared Kelce side and the Maddie Dallas side of the house? So which side are you? I know where Brent stands.
Oh, give me the third wheel all day. I mean, first of all, I actually like the third wheel. I mean, Jared, I feel like, is a dud. I'd say if we're looking at our, like, our big alpha male guys, if we're ranking like Tom Plant, Andrew Gordon, Ginger Ninja, and him, I think he's at the bottom in terms of personality. He's just like probably gives the dullest confessionals out of the entire group that's left. But I actually really like Kelce. And it's funny because looking at this cast, I'm like, okay, Kelce, Paige, Maddie, we know what the casting is going for. They're casting for the showmances. They're throwing a bunch of blonde girls in, like typical BBUS. But she has really come into her own as kind of like a fierce player. And again, she's not the best player. I think, you know, her cattiness with Maddie and the fact that, you know, we saw her at the beginning of the week say, basically called Jared a dumbass, saying, well, I'm the brains of the operation and you're clearly not. I think it's obviously not fantastic game, but she's a lot more fun to watch. And I'm not as much of a vehement Dallas hater as Brent might be. But I would say if we're comparing like Big Brother bearded guys, if Spencer Clawson is like the Alec Baldwin, Dallas is like the Billy Baldwin or the Stephen Baldwin. Like he's a little runt that thinks he's like, I'm just like him. I'm just like the greats. I'm going to wow them all with my gameplay.
I'm just like him.
and then, you know, he stands around reading a placard being like, well, I guess I'm not going to use the veto. All right. Well, I'm still an awesome player though. Yeah. See you later, Canada.
And Brent, I know that how you feel about Dallas from the podcast. Yes. You know, it was interesting. I thought going into the Thursday show, and Alex touched on this a little bit on the podcast you guys did yesterday about how from the way that they really edited it, you guys talked about whether or not the editors really disliked Dallas and whether or not they threw him under the bus, especially in the like previously on Big Brother Canada. And they talked about like, and then Dallas was all set for a backdoor. And then the announcer's like, but then. And he choked. It's like, wow, that was really, really editorializing the previously on Big Brother Canada 4. It almost made me feel like, did production want Dallas to backdoor Jared? Because I feel like the production would want Jared to stay in the house. So I'm not sure why they would be so mad that Dallas didn't. Maybe they just felt like, oh, this is going to be a really boring eviction show. Cassandra versus Christine. Well, I mean, do you feel like that production really wanted him to use the veto in that spot?
I don't know. I feel like production's only human, and I feel like Dallas is an incredibly unlikable person. He just is. I mean, him and Maddie both. That's the reason that Mike and I will side with the third wheel.
Well, tell me, let's back that up. So why do you feel like he's so unlikable? Is this from the live feeds, or is this from what he's done on the show?
How many times, Rob, does Big Brother have to come on and say, you know, cut the feeds and basically say, you know, Canadians talk nice to each other. We treat each other with respect. Don't you want Canada to like you? Basically, I mean, him calling somebody the C word multiple times and just being a horrible person in general, he's just awful. And he talks a big game and he's such a binary player. It's like, you know, somebody telling me that they got 800 on the SAT math section and they really got, you know, 480 or something. I mean, it's just shut up or put up. That's what I want to say. He had so many confessionals in the diary room about, you know, I'm going to do this and I earn this veto. I'm going to use it. And it was just, you know, come on. And yeah. I feel like the production made him pay the price for all of those all that boasting in the diary room.
But as Taryn is saying in the chat room, I'm far from a Dallas fan, but shouldn't he shouldn't be ragged on for not using the veto. Would you think that was a smart game move on his part to go ahead and get Jarrah? It seemed like that he felt like that they didn't have the votes to get him out. So wouldn't that have been a bad move?
It wasn't that they didn't have the votes. He didn't know what LaVita was going to do. I mean, he could have used the veto on Christine and she could have put up Maddie in her place. And she told him, absolutely do not use the veto. I am not ready for that. I do not want to have to get more blood on my hands. So again, I don't think that production had a problem with him not using the veto. I think production has a problem with him because he's generally a horrible house guest. And they know the fans don't like him. So they're more than, it's kind of like, I forget who it was. Always when Frankie Grande, when production figured out that we didn't like Frankie Grande, they did the whole thing about apple pie and, you know, and they just lived for that moment, you know, when they realized that, okay, we know what the fans want now. So I feel like Big Brother Canada knows what the fans want. Big Brother Canada knows the fans don't like Dallas. We're going to have some fun throwing him under the bus.
So they wanted to send him off into a trap by saying that he should be using the veto and then ultimately getting himself evicted next week. Well,
he said that. I mean, Rob, they didn't say that. He was the one who went to the diary room and said that he was the one going around the house saying, I really want to use this veto. He really wanted to do something with it, make a big move. The problem was he didn't have both levers of power. He didn't have an HOH that he could trust at that point.
Yeah.
And to be fair, he could have very easily, depending on who won HOH, got himself evicted this week. Considering the previous week, he goes up to the HOH and says, hey, yeah, you know your girlfriend? Yeah, I voted to evict her the week before, but it's a cool water under the bridge. Now let me do my dance as I go to the veto.
Brent, now I know that you have a bad taste in your mouth about Dallas, but has that also influenced your opinion on Maddie and Ramsey as well?
Less so about Ramsey, mainly because I feel like he's doing a good job as a game player and he's just a generally more likable person. I feel like Maddie, I was dying today on the feeds. She literally, with a straight face, turned to other people, and this is not spoiler, she just turned to other people and said, I feel like Canada really likes me. And like deadpan. And I can't remember who it was. I think it was LaVita who asked her, what gives you that idea? And she said, well, Orisa called my name and they used my name in the roast. I'm like, honey, we're laughing at you, not with you. Like, I mean, it was just, please stop. Right. Yes, I will admit that Dallas has colored my opinion of Maddie. But she doesn't do herself any favors because she refuses to work with the other side of the house, which is allowing the good players, like to their credit, to get further in the game and control the house because they know the two sides really won't work with each other.
One of the stories I'm really digging as well right now is this Maddie and Nick showmance that's on the DL. And this talk about how they were, you know, it literally in bed in this past episode. And, Maddie is saying like, oh, it's kind of a bummer, you know, how Nick is so concerned about, you know, his brother. And he said like, oh, my brother's going to cut my balls off if he finds me in here with you. I mean, really, Nick, can he stand up for himself a little bit?
Yeah, I agree. And I think maybe just because, again, we're getting a little bit of a microcosm of the brother's relationship through the Big Brother house, and that it's very clear that Phil, I think he is bigger, so I think he feels like he's the more aggressor of the two. I could totally imagine him wailing on Nick when they were kids and they were playing out in the middle of the street. I mean, the interesting thing about that conversation, in my opinion, was I'm pretty sure Maddie has a boyfriend or at least some sort of connection at home as well. So when she says, like, you shouldn't be worried about your brother, I was saying you should be worried about your boyfriend and the people that are watching you do this at home, because I don't know what you're coming home to once you get evicted after this, honey.
Phil is, I feel like he's the bigger fan, and I feel like he feels like he has a little bit of a ball and chain around him because anything Nick does reflects badly on him, and if Nick gets into a showmance with Maddie, now all of a sudden they're looked at as a power couple, and even more of it, they're already a target because they're two brothers together. I said their targets lessen because they only have one vote, but then if he goes off and does a showmance with Maddie, now it totally blows away that whole perceived advantage that they had in the first place. The other thing, though, is that Phil is more emotional than Nick is, and he just tends to go off and rant and say whatever he's currently thinking, whereas Nick is more introspective, and that's why their relationship comes off a little bit like Phil's in control and Nick is sort of putting up with him, when I don't really think that's totally accurate.
Brent, in the episode, we saw Dallas walk into the room and like, hey, what's going on in here? And Nick tried to be like, oh, we're just talking about everything, raccoons, the weather. And Dallas's takeaway, like, oh, that's how you know you're in a relationship, when you start talking about that stuff. And like, no, right. That's not what I meant. But how well known is this in the house about what's going on in this showmance between Nick and Maddie?
This is the part that's a little bit unclear to me. Maybe Taryn, if he's listening, can tell us. I believe, it's my understanding that everybody basically knows. Phil now knows about it. And he was going on talking to Nick earlier today about how Maddie is influencing Nick, and Nick's acting more like Maddie. And it's just, I'm not really sure exactly what's going to come of this. I just kind of feel like there are two people who are young and fit and they need a little company. That's about it.
Yeah. But isn't this somewhat problematic? Because doesn't Dallas have an issue with the brothers, Brent? So, I mean, it almost would make sense if that side of the house could bring the brothers on board, and that would give them a big advantage going up against the third wheel. But it seems as though, you know, there's a little bit of a tug of war for, you know, where the brothers should be in the house.
Yeah. But to their credit, though, or maybe to their detriment, they haven't really wanted to pick a side either. And that's really annoyed Dallas. I know that's really annoyed some other people in the house. So they haven't really gained a whole lot by being perceived that they're in the middle, because everybody realizes they're in the middle. Whereas I feel like other people, they're just sort of happen to be there. Whereas I feel like that both sides of the house feel like the brothers are working hard to stay in the middle. And that's distinctly different.
Mike, what's been your takeaway on Tim so far? I think that people have appreciated his antics on the show. But in terms of being a player in the game, how do you think that he's done now that he survived his first week where he could have been nominated?
So I'm going to promote some RHAP synergy here, Rob. In your recap with Sophie, she actually pointed out this really astute thing about, in her opinion, the three types of social players. And I don't want to, you know, I feel like I won't do it justice, but basically she talks about like people who are just nice, people that are very clearly like transparently trying to talk to you and get to know you in order to utilize you as a pawn. And then there are those that are nice but have sort of self-awareness about that so that they can figure out how it's affecting their game. And I very much feel like Tim is in that third position. I mean, it was in that Andy Heron job of running around to everybody talking. I mean, we've got these confessionals about how much people love Tim. I think it's interesting because he's been trying to come off the entire time as someone who doesn't know how to play this game. And as you get further and further in this game, it's really tough to do that, right? You can say, well, Tim can talk all he want about how bad he is at this game, but the fact is he's still here at Final 8, Final 7. And there's a myriad of reasons why he decided to vote to evict Cassandra. One of them could be he could say, oh, well, you know, I'm a really bad player, you know, because I voted to evict Cassandra and she didn't go home. Look how bad of a player I am. I don't even know how to play this game. And so I feel like, again, that adds up to the myriad of reasons why he voted to evict Cassandra. But he's going to have to keep trying to find ways to play dumb in a way to not come off like a threat. But other than that, I feel like his social game is just really catapulting him through. And he's doing a lot by using those factors to manipulate his way into conversations as well. I feel like people can very much come to him, talk to him for advice, and he'll give them advice, but he'll give them the advice that, you know, he wants them to do. He'll say, well, you should go talk to him, or you should put her up, because that's what he wants to do at the end of the day.
Right. I feel like he comes off a little bit too smart for his own good, though. If his point is trying to come off as, you know, I don't really know anything about Big Brother. I just came here to have a good time, put on a good show. I feel like he's doing a disservice to himself, because when he speaks in an open room, like we saw him during the eviction episode, talking about, I can't remember exactly what the quote was, but it was definitely game speak. He was talking about, you know, you have to understand her
currency, like power. Yes. Power is
no. Who the hell uses that word if they don't know what they're doing? I'm sorry, I've never heard anybody but a strategist use the word currency in the house. Mm-hmm. And I caught it. I don't know if everybody else in the room caught it, but that's eventually going to catch up to him, because I mean, you cannot talk like somebody who's a master strategist and then on the other hand say, oh, I don't know what's going on, I'm just here to have fun. Come on, give me a break.
Okay. Well, I think maybe if you follow it up with, why don't you go fart in a jar? and then, oh, okay, he's all fun and games. I'm going to go barbecue sauce in the shampoo.
Hey, so, you want to remember the time I got a piercing on my penis?
Yeah, wow. Oh, how about that?
Who did it myself, yes.
Wow, how bored must somebody be? Wow, that's really...
I can't. You know how they give like house guests haircuts or shave them sometimes. Hopefully it doesn't get so boring that Tim decides to do that to one of the house guests in there.
Yeah, let me pierce you in a different way. So with on the show on Thursday night, Brent, a lot was made about the fight and the tension between Tim and Nikki and Cassandra, a little bit of a triangle there. And Nikki is really seemingly out on Tim. I know that you are over having Nikki in the house, but is that something, is that for real that there is now bad blood between the international players?
I feel like it is under the current, under the radar bad blood. It's like, I mean, it was a little bit of bad blood, but I feel like Nikki's the kind of player who she'll always kind of remember that. And she's okay with Tim now. Everything seems fine as far as I could tell in the feeds. She finally found that scarf that she was looking for all yesterday, and she went on about it forever. Anyway, so she's, I feel like she's okay. But again, I feel like she's the kind of player who, I use that word loosely, player, could like bring that up at a moment's notice. And if anything causes her to go off, if she goes on slop today, which I still don't know the results of that, I'm praying for that. I really am.
Let's talk some speculation about what could be the next twist coming up, this next wild card to drop. That, Mike, what's your best working theory at this point?
I think it's got to be something with a multiple eviction. I think it's either going to be, I think most likely it's either going to be instant or maybe even triple. I mean, the fact is we have, 13 people left in this house. We're in week 4 of only a 10-week game. We got to start shelling people out quick. And so I feel, and they usually do at least, they usually do one instant eviction or one double eviction before the jury. They've done it every season of Big Brother Canada thus far. We haven't done any so far. I feel like that's the most likely thing. I know you guys talked last night about the idea of a fake eviction, but I feel like having a non-elimination week in this house is something that they're not going to do. I feel like they're going to take the exact opposite approach and really just start careening people out of the house in droves now.
Brent, what's your best guess at this point?
I'm trying to figure out what, because like last year they told us about all the twists ahead of time, and we knew going into the week what was going to be happening. Like when the triple eviction came out, we all knew going into the night what was going to happen. This time we don't know what's going to happen. I'm trying to figure out, well, why wouldn't they tell us then if they really want us to tune in? So I guess I'm sort of with the instant eviction idea, but it feels like they would say, you know, tune in next Thursday for this instant eviction that we're going to have, because they've already done it. So I'm kind of with Jordan, who was talking last night about the fact that it's probably something that is new. And Taryn said it's probably something that is sort of new, but has been repackaged from other Big Brothers that we have never seen before. So who knows what it could be, but it's got to be something where there's a reason for them not to tell us what it is.
Okay, couple of different things in the chat right now. A great friend of Rob as a podcast, Brian Lynch, writes, every single Easter they've shut down the feeds and had an instant eviction, and they always act like it's been a surprise. This next Sunday night will be Easter Sunday, to do a 90-minute episode coming into Easter when they're going to potentially not have the feeds going. Brent, does that change anything for you?
Well, certainly. And hi, Brian. I'm a huge fan of you. I really think that, I mean, that would explain it to me if I wasn't aware of the fact that every Easter that this is what's happened. I kind of don't pay attention to Easter all that much now that I don't collect Easter eggs anymore. So it would be fun if they did an instant eviction. I would love to see the ramifications of that.
So if it's an Easter eviction, though, does that mean a house guest leaves and then returns 3 days later? Is that how an Easter eviction works?
No, it's close.
Please.
The thing about that is, like, I would understand if they would tape another eviction and then air that as the Sunday night episode all on Thursday night. But it does seem weird that they would do a 90-minute Thursday episode, and then what would they put up on Sunday? So, would there just be no episode on Sunday? They just have no show this on Sunday night and do two evictions on this Thursday episode. Can I put out an idea that might be off the board in the chat room? Might shoot that down right away. Is it possible that we could see one of the first four house guests re-enter? So we go through the week, we do our eviction, and then the house guests who got evicted plus the first three house guests who were out of the house, I'm not sure if we've seen them or if they're in the sequester. What if they competed to get back into the house? And then I know there's so many people left, but I feel like that Big Brother Canada wants to keep as many people in the house for as long as possible. And then the last like 3 weeks have boom, triple eviction, like boom, double eviction, and just get down to a smaller number very quickly, but try to keep the maximum amount of people and drama in the house for as long as possible. Brent, is that tinfoil hat?
That's a good idea, but no, it can't happen because I know that Paige has been on Twitter. And I know she's talked to
She talked to you.
Yeah, they're out of the house right now. JP has also said they're out of the house. So there's nobody coming back unless they brought them back after having let them been in the real world for 4 weeks, which, you know, who knows what Big Brother Canada is capable of at this point. But I think even that's a bridge too far for them.
Stranger things have happened, though.
Yeah.
Well, also, again, if we're using the same argument that we did for the double and instant eviction, let's remember in Big Brother Canada 3, from the instant that Risha was evicted, Arisa said, one of you will be coming back into the house. So again, if that was something that they were going to utilize, they would have, if they decided to, you know, build ratings, they would have said that again as well. So maybe there's a chance that this is just a never before seen twist in Big Brother Canada that's coming our way on Thursday.
It has to be, because they won't tell us what it is, because I think it's never before seen, because if we had seen it before, they would tell us, because then, you know, like, it's a double eviction. Okay, we know what that is. It's a triple eviction. We know what that is. Okay. I feel like this is something they can't really quantify or advertise, so that's the reason they're not telling us
what it is.
Maybe
it's something we don't like and they don't want to tell us.
An interesting theory going on in the chat about maybe this will be the moment the brothers are broken up, but the house guest will choose which brother wants to stay. So in effect, two people will be going home, but one of them will be one of the brothers that night.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens Thursday if we get any hints later on during the week. Let's take some more questions and then we'll get into discussing the live feeds. This is from Ram 010992. What's the black patch on Dallas's arm? Is that covering something? Brent, is that a tattoo of like a black square that he has on his arm?
I actually don't know the answer to this question. I've noticed it as well. I haven't really seen an answer. I even asked it on Sucks, but no one really answered my question. So if anybody in the chat room knows why Dallas is wearing that, maybe he has a tattoo that like is not something that you really want to have people see. I think that's certainly a possibility.
I feel like that was an issue with Crazy James. I feel like that they had to have like, you know, tape over certain things that were on his body that they were too obscene. But it almost looks like that either he has like a tattoo of like that's like drawn out with a marker. It doesn't look like it's tape.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past Dallas to say like, oh, I got to cover up this tattoo. Okay, where's the Sharpie? There we go. I'm the best player in this game.
Yeah, I feel like they make you cover up bad tattoos with that, and then they make you cover up bad weaves with a hat like LaVita.
Oh, come on.
I loved her rerun hat.
Rob. I'm sorry. Why do you... Okay, you're coming on to a nationally televised show. Because she said it herself. I'm not saying anything that she hasn't said. I'm not making fun of her, okay? She doesn't like her weave. She got a weave in. Why would you get a weave right before you get a good Big Brother girl? I don't know. And then, because the weave's so bad, she didn't just take it out. She instead wears a hat the whole time. And the only reason I found out about this was because Phil was a complete jackass and decided while they were in front of the camera to take her hat off. And of course, she acted like she had been lit on fire or something.
Right. Well, at least they didn't rub it on their butt. I feel like that's one step above BBUS contestants.
Look. If we want to get on LaVita, we have plenty of strategy reasons to get on LaVita. We don't need to get into her weave or anything like that. We're better than that. We're better than that.
All right. You are definitely.
Okay. All right. Mike, Mitch is playing a great first half of the game. This is asked by What Up Five. Is he on anybody's radar? Let's talk about Mitch, because I think that he's probably been the class of Big Brother Canada 4 so far in terms of strategic gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely say so in terms of confessionals, right? I mean, I think we're seeing very little of him. We're seeing him sporadically. I think even Andy Heron said on Twitter that it's very comparable in terms of we see him pop up in places, and when we do, he's very strategic. We saw him specifically in the eviction episode that when, you know, Phil started to rage about the fact that they were talking about possibly putting the brothers up as a replacement, Mitch had to basically be, you know, the Phil whisperer and kind of call him down and say like, hey, listen, it's okay. And he had a really nice confessional about how like these guys are very emotionally charged, and I want to make sure to quell those emotions so that we don't draw attention to the middle. And I feel like it's interesting, though, because there were some talks in the house about how Mitch was siding with the third wheel. And I'm sure, Brent, you can speak to a little bit more about like if Mitch is more inclined to hang out with those people than he might be to the other side. But if he's starting to get looped in by other people with that group, that might not spell too well for a guy that's really trying to ride the middle of the house.
Yeah, he's definitely, you know, if it's either A or B, he's definitely seen more with the third wheel. I think it's just because he has a better working relationship with them because they're more stable people. I mean, you know, you're talking about Dallas and Maddie Ramsey, who is, you know, he's almost laughable. I mean, he's doing a better job now, but, you know, like the whole first week, Alex talked about on the show last night about the fact that he went around making final two deals with everybody and, you know, my word is gold and all that sort of jazz. So, I mean, I think it's just a reflection of the working dynamics in the house. It's not anything he's currently seeking. I will say that the fans should not get too tied to Mitch. He's the player I picked to win this season, but I just feel like that rarely does the best player ever win Big Brother Canada. But fortunately for us, we have more than one person playing really well this season. And I feel like Joel is playing equally well, and Tim is also playing pretty well as well. So I really like all three of their games.
Taking a look back at the week gone by, Brent, I know Stephen Fishback gives out the fishy every week. I don't know if we want to have some sort of Big Brother Canada MVP for the week.
The Wolgi.
The Wolgi. Who would you say in your mind was the Big Brother Canada MVP of the week? And what I mean by that is which player ended up getting what they wanted to have happen in a way that leaves them in the best position heading into week four?
I feel like I would give it to Tim, but I'm also more partial to the good TV players. And Tim has made a point of telling us that he wants to make really good TV. And that's why that's one of the reasons that he cast the vote that he did last night, because he wants to make a great show and he wants to hear people go, "Oh my God, that was really close." So, I think he got what he wanted because he wanted the dynamics on both sides of the house to remain as they are, and he got that. He made sure that neither side felt like they were so much more powerful than the other side that they just, neither side, you know, will eventually just give up and say, "Oh, you know, what's the use? We're totally outnumbered at this point." And he has the trust of the people in the middle because he told Mitch what he was going to do. You know, if anybody else gets power, he may have some explaining to do, but I think he probably came out of this week the safest. Or he got what he wanted. I'd give him the MVP.
Mike, would you agree that Tim was the person who played the best game this past week?
I might give it to either Tim or Joel. I think because, and this is an interesting concept, because I feel like in Big Brother Canada, more than Big Brother US, there's a certain amount of strategy that is playing to the cameras, that is playing to the audience, because we know from past Big Brother seasons, there will be chances where the audience is going to vote on something, whether it's a Chevrolet power shift, whether it's Canada's HOH, whether it's vote for two have-nots and one of them is going to win a diamond power of veto, your popularity is going to have a certain effect. And, you know, Joel was definitely not playing up his dead brother. I'm going to say that out right here, right now. But Joel got a lot of screen time this week. He got a March of the Moose task. He, you know, he had a storyline as well. Canada and the fans are in love with him, myself included. I was very iffy on Joel going in. I thought he was going to be one of these like try hard super fan nerd types, but he really endeared to me over these past 4 weeks. And so I feel like if you ask me right now if Canada was able to vote on somebody getting a superpower, I feel like it's either got to be Joel or Tim. And so I feel like both these guys did a great job of not only positioning themselves, but they also happened to get things thrown their way that made them resonate well with the Canadian audience as well, which will lead to something better down the line, hopefully.
Mike, do you appreciate that, I guess, since Big Brother Canada already purchased the music cue for the however many minutes from
Rent? Seasons of Love, yeah.
That's just like now the dramatic Joel music?
Yeah, I was a little weirded out when that... First of all, he had by far like the most awkward intro clip package for a Big Brother season that I've ever seen. This guy had to sing Seasons of Love alone on stage in front of the entire nation of Canada. Like, I'm a musical theater performer and I would have like refused to do that. So good on Joel. Yeah, but when I heard that music, I was like... Because it was the let's go around and share things, you know, montage. And this is also like, we get Tim saying, "Oh yeah, PS my penis," and then Seasons of Love plays from Rent. Like, that's the most weirdest juxtaposition of music ever. it ended up actually segueing really nicely into Joel's, you know, his unfortunate unfortunate incident that happened with his brother. But when it first came on, I was like, I think what Seasons of Love is to Big Brother Canada 4, the Harlem Globetrotters theme is to The Amazing Race, it seems like, at this point.
All right. Let's look at it from the other way around. Okay. Other than Christine, who went home, Brent, who do you feel like was the player whose position in the house was the most weakened after week three?
I really feel like Dallas, it has to be. And then, I dislike him, but I really feel like he did himself a disservice because I feel like people know that his word is not good. I feel like the brothers know that he's after them. I feel like Jared and Kelsey are aware of the fact that he was trying to get Jared backdoored. I mean, he's just not very good at covering his tracks. And he doesn't really seem to care either. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really care if he's that good at covering his tracks either. And so I feel like he's in, Whoopi Goldberg in Ghost. You in danger, girl. You know, you got to do something, play a better game here, because people know what you're up to.
But do you feel like that he was in a good position coming into week three, or you feel like he was in a bad position and it only got worse?
I feel like he was in a bad position and he only got worse, but a bad-ish position. He was okay because he's one of a trio, and there's two trios in the house. And there's, you know, certainly Cassandra didn't play fabulous this past week. She barely survived. And then, you know, she's played bad. So just, you know, I feel like he's got company in that boat, but I said this last night. I think it was JP that said it. I forget who. They all look the same to me after a while. they said that it was Alex. Dallas comes from a team sport background, and he cannot see past it's us versus them. Mm-hmm. And he just doesn't have any subtlety to his game.
Yeah. He's playing on a switch instead of a dial, basically. It's either on or off. And the thing that I would also kind of agree with as well is that he won the veto, and in this, you know, Vanessa Russo era of like, oh, some people might need a reason to put a house guest off, now we can kind of make an argument of, hey, Dallas is winning competitions, let's put him up as a threat. So I feel like he might have added a little bit, even though that target was like fairly big on him to begin with, it got a little bit of a microcosm or a modicum bigger on his back because he won a competition, ended up doing nothing with the power.
And Mike, do you agree Dallas was the worst player of the week?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I mean, I guess I would say so because, you know, the third wheel definitely improved their position. Vastly, considering that I think everyone thought that they were going to be the big targets coming in. They were able to broker a deal with the HOH. LaVita, even though, again, on paper, when it first began, people were furious at her for what she did. She was able to make inroads, and like we said a little while ago, I don't know how much of a person's target she would be, no matter who won HOH here. I mean, yeah, I mean, even though, you know, Tim might have put himself a little bit more in the spotlight from this hinky vote, I do feel like Dallas, in the minority of this vote as well, might have played the worst. Maybe, I mean, if you want to couple Maddie in there as well, but Maddie also kind of now has this relationship thing going with Nick, that if she needs to be swayed over to the middle, she can, whereas Dallas sort of doesn't have that hookup at the moment.
Okay. Let's get into talking about the spoilers. We're going to talk about who is the winner of the HOH and where their head is at in the events of the last 24 hours. So if that is not what you want to hear, we will be back again next Friday for some more Big Brother Canada talk on Rob's podcast. Andy Herron scheduled to join us next Friday to talk about all this. Yay. And of course, Jordan Parhar will be live after the episode this upcoming Sunday night. And so let's talk spoilers.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler.
Warning. Protective action should be taken.
This is the first time I've watched this because I usually listen to the Big Brother podcast.
You look stunned, Mike.
I didn't know you actually operate the buzzer yourself. Should have backed that up to Seasons of Love one day. I feel like it really comes in handy.
It's a scene, man. Okay. So let's get into talking about the events of the last 24 hours. Of course, Brent, you guys talked about this last night on the blab with Jordan and how Joel became the winner of the HOH, that him and Mitch were the winners. They decided that Joel should have this HOH. Has there been any more information that has come out over these past 24 hours or so about why they decided, after they were in this great position in the middle, why at this point in time did they feel like this was right for Joel to have an HOH?
Well, I can't remember the Twitter name, but somebody nailed it in one of the comments last night. They were jointly worried about the fact that some of the teams had members from opposing alliances on them. For instance, like Kelsey and Ramsey, I think, and Jared and Dallas. And they were rightly afraid that if they won, then they would have to make some sort of a deal. You know, I'll give you HOH if you keep my three safe, that sort of thing. And then who's left to put up but the people who are playing best in the middle? So that's why they ended up having to win it. Jared and Dallas were apparently in second place, so that's why they won. As for who ended up getting HOH and why, Mitch didn't really want it, but apparently they did some sort of rock, paper, scissors, and Joel won it anyway. So Joel is your current HOH, and I have no idea what he's going to do with the nominations because it's still sort of up in the air.
Just building on your point, Mike, of where we've seen Joel get the best edit so far out of anybody in the house. Now, Sunday night, we're going to come into the show. We're going to read the HOH letter. You know, bet your bottom dollar, Joel is completely in tears reading the HOH letter. He's going
to
get...
I don't know if they have the music licensing rights to tomorrow, though, so I don't know if that's going to play in the background.
He will be a mess, crying. Everybody look at pictures of his family. So that the Joel love will continue going into Sunday night. But here he is with a tough decision to make. And so, Brent, what's been the buzz as to who is going to be going up the block this week?
If I had to guess right now, I would say it's probably going to be Kelsey and Raul as possible nominations. It's also possible it could be Dallas and Maddie, and it could be a combination of any one of those four, plus Tim or Nikki at this point. Although I do think that Joel is rightly worried about putting Tim on the block, because no matter how you look at the votes, it might be a little too close for comfort, and he doesn't want to lose him.
I mean, now these people are in the house. They're studying this a lot more closely than I am. But if I'm somebody who's in this big alliance in the middle, wouldn't it make the most sense to put up one person from one side and one person from the other side of the house so that the sides continue to campaign against each other and really try to pull the votes from the middle as opposed to making an enemy out of one side of the house?
Well, that's one way to look at it. I think the way that Joel is looking at it is if he puts up one side from each, one person from each side, that he's going to have six people mad at him, and who knows what could happen in that instance. And maybe they all come together and figure things out. I don't think that's terribly likely, but to be fair to you, Rob, I don't think that Joel has really given a fair moment to putting up one from each side. I mean, everything I hear, it's either, this trio or that trio, this trio or that trio. So I really don't think I don't think it's really in his universe yet that he could do that.
Secondly, yeah. Mike, what about the idea of putting up two people from the middle here and then a backdoor plan, which most certainly should work? I know it has not gone well for the HOHs this season, but if you put up two people from the middle, you don't piss off both sides. Ultimately, you'll piss off one side when, say, okay, let's put Maddie up there at the veto ceremony. And then, then the people in the middle and then the people from the third wheel side of the house will all vote together to make sure that Maddie goes home in that scenario.
I mean, that's you're getting pretty cute with that gameplay. I mean, I think that would totally work. Not hot. Sorry, LJ. I mean, listen, if this was Big Brother 5 and this was a six-finger plan, absolutely. But hey, what if you put up Mitch and Tim and then Jared wins veto and doesn't use it? You know, then you're screwed. I think
up Nikki and Tim?
I mean, if you put up Nikki and Tim, again, if somebody outside your alliance wins it and they don't use it, then, you know, one of your guaranteed allies is out there.
Here's what I'm going to put Nikki and Tim up, and I'm going to stand up there and say, you know what? Where I come from, Big Brother Canada is for Canadians. And so I have to, for Canada, wake up, Canada. This is your show. A Canadian should win. I'm going to make Big Brother Canada great again.
Yeah, exactly.
No international people should win. I'm putting up the two international people up on the block. And And what about that? And then you can backdoor somebody.
And then Joel's nominated for a prime minister of Canada once he gets out of the house, right?
Yeah,
and starts going on the campaign trail.
I feel like that's a terrible idea, though, because then you're outnumbered. Well, sorry, Rob, but I feel like it's a terrible idea because you're outnumbered for the veto then. I mean, it's more likely than not that it's not going to be used. Because if you nominate Tim and Nikki, if anyone from those two sides, and basically, you know, that we say three, but they basically have four with Cassandra and Levita sort of, you know, congregating to one side or the other. If anybody from those eight people wins the veto, they're probably not going to use it because they don't want somebody from their side to go up.
Mm-hmm. I think that the best thing to do is honestly, if you put up Kelsey and Raul or you put up Dallas and Maddie, again, going back to this idea of reasons, we can say, hey, you're very clearly a strong pair in the house and we want to break that up. And yes, you may be choosing a side, but at the end of the day, you're not angering everyone else, and it seems like you have a legitimate rationalization behind it. What these guys are afraid of, Rob, is basically what you did in Survivor Amazon. They're afraid of you someone saying, hey, there's a swing vote in the middle. Let's get everyone else together and get rid of the middle so that it's just, you know, straightforward two alliances against each other. And so they're really walking a tightrope here. So I think it, you know, I can understand why Joel and Mitch went for it. It's still a bit of a tough pill to swallow because now the power is in Joel's hand. But I think once he makes these nominations, sort of like what happened with, or what should have happened with LaVita this past week, once we get into veto territory and things become a little more complicated, I think maybe the sting of Joel choosing a side might be mitigated a bit.
Okay. So, all right, here's my new proposal. Here's my last proposal. All right. So if I'm Joel, how about I'm going to put up, say, like, you know, I put Maddie and Dallas up on the block. But before I do that, I'm going to take a meeting with Jared and Kelsey and say, I don't know what to do. What should I do? Like, what do you guys think I should do? And then they say, put up Maddie and Dallas. Like, okay, will you guys keep me safe next week if I do what you want? And like, okay, sure. And then when they get mad, he's like, oh, this Jared and Kelsey told me to do it. I just did what they told me to do. And so they're not going to be mad at Joel. They'll be mad at the people who they were already fighting with who told them to do that.
Yeah, I think I like that idea.
Finally.
I'm not going to poo-poo that one. I will say that I feel like Joel has not helped himself, though, because he has said, this is what I hate when people get HOH, when they start telling too many people that you're not on my radar, that I'm not going to nominate you, that, you know, because then you really leave your box yourself into what you can get for a deal. You know, Vanessa was very good about that. I feel like Vanessa never really said anything without, you know, Vanessa knew what she was already going to do in Big Brother 17, and she would still offer a deal to somebody, say, you know, I won't do this if you'll promise me safety, even though the person who she was making the deal to knew that she was already dead set on doing what she was going to do anyway, and they still had to agree to the deal.
Yeah. Okay. Let's start to get into some of these questions and talk through what you guys want to talk about. Of course, hashtag RHAP, or you can go ahead and post some questions on our YouTube channel. All right, so let's go to 620MDB. Did Mitch and Joel make a mistake by not throwing the HOH competition? Nobody's targeting them. It seems like they'd be better off playing the middle. So in terms of what they did, we talked through some of the reasons why. Brent, do you think it'll backfire?
No, I feel like this. I feel like everybody in the house likes Joel. I feel like they'll respect his nominations. I feel like they're not going to be mad at him. I think they really had no choice because you don't know what the Big Brother universe looks like in a world where Jared and Dallas have just won the HOH competition and have to sit out there for 10 minutes and talk it out and figure out what they're going to do. All of a sudden, you're not liking your position in the middle that much. So I feel like they had to take it.
Okay. This is from Danny, who says, I disagree that, and I say that Kelsey and Raul are the most annoying people in the house, and I can't stand Jared's voice. Mike, you said that you like the third wheel. So what do you say to defend your three people alliance?
Well, it's clear that Danny is a vodka fan, from the amount that Kelsey and Raul were consuming. I mean, I don't like Jared's voice either. I think that, again, it's sort of like the lesser of two evils, in my opinion. I'm not a big fan of Dallas. Maddie, I think, is fine, but, you know, I'm not so much for the smoochy of the showmances, so I'm not so much for her and Nick. So I guess, if chosen between the two options, give me the third wheel, who at least seem to be showing a little bit more strategic acumen than whatever Maddie and Dallas are these days. And Ramsey's pretty good, too.
Brent, I didn't really want to talk about LaVita's weave, but let me just talk to you about Jared's look and what he's doing in the house. I feel like he's going for like a very posery, sort of like Johnny Depp type, with ski hat, and he's wearing a scarf all the time. I know it's Canada. I know it's cold, but is that annoying?
It's not annoying at all when anybody wears a scarf, Rob. I have no idea what you're talking about. Seriously, I can't believe I just had this sitting over here.
There's no need for a scarf in the diary room.
Or on a podcast, for that matter, but we still do it.
Guess so. So you'd say thumbs up.
I say thumbs up. I like Jared. He's a sweet guy. I mean, I agree he's not exactly riveting television, but in a season where there's a lot of sort of despicable personalities, at least a few of them, he's kind of a bright, shining light, and he's fun to look at as well. What can I say?
Okay. All right. Here's another theory from 620MDB. You guys are giving the producers too much credit. They aren't saying what the twist is because they want to keep their options open just in case Mitch convinces Joel to backdoor Tim. They need to save him. All right, Brent, does your conspiracy theory tingle? Are you getting an aluminum foil hat type sensation that maybe we're onto something here?
It's possible. I mean, I certainly agree that the producers don't want to lose Tim, but I feel like Tim's playing a good enough game where I don't feel like that would... I really feel like the stars would have to align for that to happen. They'd be really unlucky to lose Tim right now.
We would all be. We would all
be. We would, yeah.
All right. Let's see. This is from Jameerified wants to say, I think that if Ramsey can survive the upcoming dangerous weeks, he'll be in a position similar to Godfrey. I'm not convinced he's as savvy as Godfrey, though. Mike, are you seeing Ramsey as another Godfrey?
Well, the Godfrey skeleton is there, which is basically like, yes, you have sort of I wouldn't say an alliance, but sort of like an association with a group which Godfrey kind of had with Bruno and the fringes of the Chop Shop. But he's kind of has a relationship with everyone else, and he's not really considered to be a threat as much as he tried to kind of beast mode his way through the Divergent Series Presents Allegiant veto competition. I feel like nobody's really saying, oh yeah, we need to get rid of him. I feel like, you know, if Joel tries to swing towards Dallas and Maddie's side this week, and Ramsey ends up on the block next to Maddie, that might be interesting, and maybe that's a chance that Ramsey, you know, goes, but I think he kind of has his fingers loosely in everyone else's jars at this point that I think...
Fart jars?
Well, hopefully not deep in those adopted jars, because those are very smelly jars, but hopefully if he makes it past, again, these couple of weeks, as the question alludes to, I think he's set up pretty well, unless, you know, if he does win an HOH and his hand is forced a little bit. Godfrey sort of had the, some would argue, luxury and some would argue detriment of not winning an HOH until the very end. So we didn't need to really make any sort of decisions besides saving himself with a veto. If Ramsey's put into that position, if he makes a decision and angers a bunch of people, that might be a game-ending decision for him.
Okay. John Clark wants to know, is the complaint box in the storage room the lamest thing they've ever done on Big Brother Canada? It was nowhere to be found after the Sunday episode. Brent,
wait, so is John Clark using this as his complaint box about the complaint box?
Yes. Brent, is that the lamest thing they've ever done on Big Brother Canada?
Possibly. The house guests don't even really take it seriously at this point. I think Phil was like, I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was LaVita. I forget. He was trying to, he put a wish or a complaint in the complaint cabinet, whatever, to make sure that LaVita would like him or something like that. Like, whatever. It's just, it's a good idea in fantasy, which in practice is actually kind of terrible.
Okay. This is from Steph Ginger Ninja Wanamaker. I agree.
Oh, congratulations on the marriage.
Yes. I agree with everything Brent said. Can't stand LaVita and her hats. Love Jared, and we find with Mitch or Joel or Tim winning. The guys, except Dallas and Phil, are much more likable than the girls. I do want to talk about LaVita because we haven't really talked about where she potentially stands right now going into this week. Brent, where is LaVita aligned? Is she back with the third wheel after potentially that those were her enemies early on in the season?
No. She's basically with Joel and Mitch and Maddie and sort of Dallas Ramsey at this point. I mean, she's floating on the B side of the house at this point, but she does have a sort of loose alliance with Joel and Mitch. I shouldn't even say alliance. It's a loose working relationship with Joel and Mitch at this point. But she's totally safe. I haven't heard her name come out of Joel's mouth once as a possible nomination this week. So I like her position, and I almost blew it on the show earlier. I'm so sorry. But of course, the one person who who totally hates her guts. It's so funny. I'm sorry. Oh, I watched it. This for an hour last night. Oh my God. Cassandra and LaVita going at it in the bedroom. And they were just like talking. It was like talking in circles, beating a dead horse. Just Rob, it was fascinating feed watching. Yeah. I loved it.
There's a great GIF going around of them hugging after the end of the conversation, and Cassandra's face just registers so much disgust, as in, I cannot wait to get my hands off of this dumb bitch and get back to Tim.
Great. Seriously. And by the way, I would disagree with what the commenter said. I love you. I appreciate the shout outs and everything. But I feel like that both Cassandra and LaVita, and even Kelsey to a lesser extent, are fabulous television. Like they're terrible players, but they're great TV, and I love watching Cassandra. She's hypnotic.
Speaking of Cassandra, do you feel like she's out of the woods now after narrowly surviving the eviction this week? Do you think that she'll be safe for a while, or do you think that she could end up back on the block very soon?
No, I don't think she'll. I have, again, that's another name that I really haven't heard Joel put out as a possible nominee this week. It's interesting because Joel, in going over many nominations, realizes that Jared is probably playing one of the best games in the house right now from his standpoint. He thinks he's a threat. He feels like he's kind of like Emmett, but they're all kind of like, well, we'll deal with him later. And I've heard that said about so many people who got really, really far in the game. Oh, we'll deal with him later. The fact that Jared is a likable person and has, you know, two people around him who basically adore him, and a third, if you kind of count Cassandra, who, you know, we all know, knew him from before going into the Big Brother house. I think he's a pretty dangerous player.
And I will say with Cassandra as well, I feel like this first like third of the game is very social heavy. As much as we may talk about the strategy, there is a lot of stuff going on about, like, you know, there is emotional sympathy going on. Cassandra just came off of a week where she was nominated on slop, like she got, you know, barbecue sauce in her hair, everything that bad. It was Myers rule of Big Brother with Cassandra last week. And I feel like Joel, who was sort of like her co-patriot in not only slop last week, but also had to dump her as part of a March of the Moves task, might be like, okay, Cassandra, like, I'm good giving you a bye week. And by the way, apparently the have-not competition just ended. And for the third week in a row, Cassandra is a have-not. So she just keeps gaining the sympathy, I feel, from the rest of the house guests at this point.
Right. I have to say, Rob, really quickly, though, that apparently something big happened in the have-not competition, which I know you'll be thrilled with because nothing big ever happens in the have-not competition. But there was some fight, and apparently Mitch and Dallas really got into it to a point where Mitch is worried about what his boyfriend will think about his reaction to the whole thing, and then, of course, becoming a have-not. I guess it was just really competitive. Nobody wanted to be on slop, as they shouldn't, and it got really tense out there.
But what could Mitch have done that his boyfriend is going to be upset with him?
I don't know. He could have pulled, like, I mean, I'd be embarrassed if I acted like Gary in Big Brother 1, so.
or maybe he started making out with Dallas.
I'd be disappointed in him.
Listen, yeah. The HOH competition was about people nearly kissing. God knows what the have-not competition is going to be like this week.
It was apparently a baseball-themed competition, but I have no idea what. I can't wait to see what apparently caused this drama.
Yeah, okay, so a lot of intrigue. That's going to all be part of the Sunday night show?
Yes, okay. It will be.
All right, so be sure to check out that and then listen to Jordan Parhar right after that on Sunday night. All right, let's take one or two more questions as more details dribble in from the HO or from the have-not competition. Jameer wants to say, are Joel and Mitch really wanting to work with LaVita? Isn't it in their best interest to keep the third wheel alliance in the house until jury, because the third wheel alliance will go after LaVita, Phil, Nick, and Tim before they ever go after Mitch and Joel? So do you think that that Mitch and Joel are... should they actually go ahead and work with LaVita to target the third wheel, Brent?
I don't know. I feel like I trust in Joel at this point. I feel like he's played a good game. And there are a couple different roads to go here, I feel like. And I don't think either one of them is necessarily wrong. And also, you know, LaVita has shown some ability to play nice and adapt with people that she previously didn't care for. I mean, her and Kelsey are not on great terms at this point, but they're on good enough terms where they're at least getting along at this point. So I don't think that it's a given that the third wheel would go after them anyway, or okay. would go after LaVita anyway, is what I'm trying to say.
All right, one more question. And from Sasha K, could Nikki and Tim possibly use their fight strategically and have a secret alliance? Mike, what do you think the chances are of the international people continuing to work together despite this bump in the road?
I mean, I think they're going to work together. I think I don't know too much about Nikki Graham, but from what I hear, she throws these fights all the time and then everything just goes back to the status quo. And so I feel like these house guests might even have that sort of mentality as well, that despite, I mean, they even Tim brought it up, like Nikki throws hissy fits and starts internally exploding at like every time, you know, something's missing from the fridge. And right. so I think like the more time she does it, it's sort of like the law of diminishing returns mm-hmm. where, you know, every time she keeps fighting, people are going to say, okay, that's just Nikki being Nikki. And so I don't think anyone really thinks that Tim and Nikki are sort of, you know, they're sort of in a state of disrepair at this point. And it seemed like they made up a lot. They talked for like an hour, but it seems like they made up after that entire incident anyway.
I'm right. kind of with you on this one, Brent, in terms of my reaction to the Nikki histrionics. I'm a little...
Yeah, exactly. By the way, I will tell you guys, to correct one thing, apparently Cassandra was on the losing have-not team, but she's exempt from being a have-not. I guess the winning team got to pick somebody, and they decided to feel sorry for her, so they picked Cassandra as the person who is exempt from being a
have-not. Sorry or sorry for her?
Well, both. Yeah, definitely. And apparently, the whole fight started when Tim threw a bat during the competition, and maybe it came close to hitting somebody or something, but it might have got a little physical out there.
That's such a joke. I just threw a bat at you. It's a joke. It's a prank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, in Toronto, I hear that the bat flip is particularly popular. So maybe it's like, I'll endear myself to the people from Toronto with my bat flip. I'll be just like Jose Batista. All right, sports jokes. Okay, that's going to do it for us. Sports jokes not playing for Mike and Brent here today.
But I got it. Okay.
Let's get back to the musical theater talk.
Yeah. Mike, were you pumped up that they did a Grease-inspired HOH challenge on Thursday night?
Yeah. My favorite part of Grease Live was when the two guys in the leather jackets almost made out when they were fostering a ball between them. I loved that. And they were playing like, I thought they were actually going to be going into a song, but it seemed like they were riffing the saxophone music over and over again, which probably would have driven me insane. But I like it. I like when Big Brother Canada caters to my love of musical theater between Joel and the music involved in the competitions.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff all around today. We need a hashtag. Mike, you have any thoughts?
We could do hashtag Easter eviction, hashtag Wolgi. I'm trying to think of a couple of other ones. I'm not sure right now.
Brent, did you have anything?
I'm never good at this, okay. Actually.
Turn it over to the chat room while we wrap up. They can come up with something. All right, so that's going to do it for us here today. No Amazing Race podcast this week or next week as well. We're going to be back on the Amazing Race on Friday, April 1st. Again, next week, Andy Heron coming up on the podcast. If you're listening to the audio podcast version, you could hear my interview with Christine. I will say that she was very succinct in the answers to my questions. So you can hear that interview. It's only a couple minutes after this podcast. After this podcast.
Oh, boy.
She was. I'd say that we could have on for this week's exit interviews, we could put them on a scale from Christine to the person who got voted off Survivor, which I won't spoil in case you didn't watch that. Then also... don't miss any of our Survivor coverage. Really good Survivor podcasts this week. Sophie Clark, also Angie Kontz with the voicemails. Fun stuff yesterday with two ladies that really know their stuff about Survivor. All right. What's the
looks like hashtag make Canada great again.
I don't want to go political.
I knew that wasn't going to fly.
I don't want to go political.
Brian Lynch suggested fart jar. What about like hashtag finger in a fart jar?
Yeah. Well, again,
he has a brand here, Mike. Work with us. Come on.
I know.
We'll go back to the Wolgi, for the MVP of the week.
All right.
All right. So, that's going to do it here for us. Very excited to be covering a really great season of the Big Brother Canada. You could follow Brent on Twitter. He is at One Lucky Gay, all spelled out, no numbers there. And then also Mike is at a Mike Bloom type this Sunday night. Jordan Parhar will be live after the Sunday night episode and again live after the Wednesday night episode before we do it all again next Friday. Good Friday. It'll be a great Friday for us as we cover the week in Big Brother Canada week 4. Anything else, guys?
I'm good.
All right.
Great show, Rob.
On the audio version, hang out for my interview with Cassandra. For everybody else watching on video, I'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye. All right. Before we get into our exit interview, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are friends over at TrueCar, because it can be difficult to find clarity when you're trying to figure out what's going on in the Big Brother house. But it can also be difficult to find clarity when you're trying to find the best price on a brand new car. You could be paying thousands more than your neighbor for the same car. So how do you know what's really fair? Of course, it's good to do your research when you're buying a car, but there's really only one place to get the most comprehensive car pricing information available. And the truth is that car prices can vary even within your area. So when you know the car you want and you're ready to buy, there's only one place to go: True Car and the True Car mobile app. No hassles, no headaches, just the car you want at a price that you can feel good about. People are saving an average of over $3,000 off of MSRP. It's how car buying was always meant to be. Over 2 million cars have been sold by the True Car Certified Dealer Network, and there's over 10,000 dealers in the True Car Certified Dealer Network. Work directly with a True Car Certified Dealer when you visit TrueCar.com or download the True Car app and start saving. True Car, never overpay. All right, let's get into our week 3 exit interview here on the podcast. And today we're going to be speaking with Christine Kelsey, who was evicted this Thursday night by a vote of 6-5. She was up on the block against Cassandra, and ultimately the effort to save her in the house did not work. And so she becomes the third player evicted from Big Brother Canada 4. We have her on the line. Christine, are you there?
Hello.
Good morning, Christine. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Oh, well, very nice to talk to you. And did not expect to be talking to you this week, but here we are, and hope you're doing okay.
Oh, I'll live.
Yeah. Especially
I didn't like
with,
it either.
Yeah, especially with that new furniture from the brick. That'll be nice, right?
Oh, absolutely. Right. At least I didn't go out a complete loser.
All right. So it seemed like the plan this week from the HOH was not to send you home, but of course, you know, expect the unexpected in the Big Brother house. How did you end up here?
I don't know. I'm thinking that, you know, it was really super close, and the house decided to keep Cassandra because she was easier to get out later.
Yeah. And why do you feel like that it ultimately was Cassandra who they decided to keep around?
Well, Kelsey pulled me aside right before I left, and she said, "I really want to keep you in the house because we get along with you better, but Cassandra's a walking time bomb, and so she'll be easier in the long run."
So was it part of your strategy to not campaign too much this week, or did you feel like that Cass was just going to hang herself in what she was doing in the house?
I was campaigning. I was just doing it very subtly, and nobody knew I was doing it. So I was planting the seeds. I was campaigning. I was listening to what people had to say. I was telling them what I had to say. And then I knew that Cassandra would over-campaign and just drive everybody insane. So I let her do her thing, and then I kicked it up at the last 2 days. But it wasn't enough.
Can you go back to that power of veto ceremony where it looked like Dallas was going to use the power of veto and potentially take you off so that they could do a backdoor plan? Did he give you any promises about what he was going to do at that point?
He did. He was gung-ho. He really wanted to do it. He said he was going to take me off the block and he was going to force the veto's hand. But in the end, he thought it was going to hurt his game because she would have put up Maddie or Ramsey, and he wasn't willing to take the chance, I guess. He regretted it instantly.
How much were you aware of the campaigning Dallas was doing on your behalf? And do you think that that was something that helped get it to 6-5, or it was something that ultimately cost you?
I really appreciated Dallas's campaigning for me because he meant it truly for his game and for me. And I knew what was going on and I liked it, and it didn't hurt my game at all.
How hard was it for you to relate to these younger people that were in the Big Brother house? Did you feel like that that was something that hurt you in terms of connecting with this group?
Not at all. I actually connected with everybody. I always have. I'm always hanging around with 20-year-olds, and it was not a big deal at all. They forgot how old I was most of the time. It didn't hurt my game at all.
When the international people came into the house, in Tim and Nikki, you didn't seem like you were super thrilled to have them there. Was there any reason in particular that you felt like that this wasn't going to be a great thing to have these international people in the house?
I was pissed fully. And I felt, for so many reasons, we just got rid of one and now we're adding two. Mm-hmm. So that was annoying. And also, they had played the game. They knew what they were doing and it scared me.
Yeah. If you could do this whole 3 weeks in the Big Brother house over again, is there one thing in particular that you would say that you should be doing differently?
Yeah. I would have voted Levita out. I would have campaigned harder because there was people on the fence and I knew she was the one that had to go. And that I would change for sure.
I know you've talked about what a big fan you are of the game, that in the first vote, you talked about how you waited 16 years to cast that first vote. Have you been a live feed watcher or just the TV version of the game?
Just the TV version. I never watched the live feeds. I couldn't find them. I have a bad old computer, so I never got to watch them, but I definitely will at some point.
What would you say, if you had to describe your 3 weeks in the Big Brother house, how would you describe that experience for you?
Loved it, and would do it again.
Wow.
It was great. I had so much fun.
Is there anything that you felt like, even with 16 years of watching the show and that experience, that you felt like that you weren't prepared for or that you couldn't have prepared for coming into the house?
I was really prepared in every way. I knew what to expect, but there was a lot of downtime that I didn't realize. There was a lot of hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, it's pretty boring in there in between competitions, and I didn't expect that much boredom. But it was fun at the same time.
All right. Well, Christine, very nice to chat with you here for a bit today. All the best to you, and, good luck with everything.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Christine from Big Brother Canada 4. Kept it short here with Christine. It answers questions very, very quickly. All right, so that'll do it for our Big Brother Canada Week 3 coverage here on the podcast. And again, we got some really fun shows coming up here in the next couple of weeks on our Big Brother Canada Fridays. Andy Heron next Friday, Johnny Mack on April 1st, and that is not a joke. Not an April Fool's joke. So we got a lot of fun stuff coming up. No Amazing Race here on Robin's Podcast these next 2 weeks, but plenty of great Survivor coverage coming your way. And of course, everything we're doing on post-show recap. So have a good weekend, everybody. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.